Hi, welcome to Washington Game Changers. I'm Lori Hennessy from League of Education Voters, and Washington Game Changers is a podcast we started about a year ago. It allows us the opportunity to talk to people who are doing good in the community in Washington State. One of those people is Olga Diaz. Hello.
Hi.
And I'm so excited to talk to Olga, who will tell you much more about background, passions, how we met. We'll get into that. But first of all, I just want to say I love the fact that you have this cool, different kind of bluish background. I need color in my life. It's been a long week, so I need something to smile about. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, my house here is, I think every room is a different color, and this is my bedroom. It happens to be this color blue, and then very Seahawk green on the other wall.
So of course, of
it's
course.
Seahawky Sounders in here just by default of them being my favorite colors. Not. I know very little about sport, of all things.
Yeah, that's the that is the problem when you like blue and green around here. People always take it as, oh, you're a Sounders fan, you're a Seahawks fan.
I mean, I'll take it, it's fine, but I don't know anything. Don't ask questions.
Why don't we start with tell us a little bit about the trajectory of your career, how you got started and what you do.
Sure. So I am in my day job, the Government Affairs Director for Forterra Northwest. It's a Washington-based conservation nonprofit based loosely out of Seattle before the pandemic, and we got rid of our office. Now we're based out of everyone's kitchen, dining room, wherever we're working. But we work predominantly on the west side of the state. We do a little bit over in Kittitas County, some out in Mason and on the peninsula. But for the most part, it's a pretty Puget Sound based org, like many of the other statewide in Washington. We always call ourselves a little bit of a non-traditional land trust because we do the traditional land trust work of buying, conserving land. We're also getting into housing development and working in urban communities and zoning. And, so we have a bit of a robust amount of things that I watch as the government affairs director. I do the lobbying. So I'm in the housing committee as much as I'm in the ag committee. So it's interesting. And it's a whole new space for me. So I have been in this job. I started just before the pandemic, long enough to learn where the office was before we got rid of it. And then get into it. But I had a long history of working in the legislature. So I had worked in the House and the Senate for 5-6 years before going to various political orgs and nonprofits. So I worked at the State Democratic Party, and then I worked at One America, really on their campaigns and election sides, trying to get more people of color and immigrants elected to office. And then I came over here to Forterra. So I just switched lanes entirely. I was like, all right, I'm going to take an election cycle break and I'm going to try this lobbying gig. And so far the lobbying is fun. Forterra doesn't even have a C4 or a PAC. So it's kind of a fun to wash my hands of the thing that I do outside of work.
Forterra does not have a C4 or a PAC.
What's that?
Forterra does not have a C4 or a PAC. Wow, no. That surprises me.
Yeah, wow. So I do all of that in my fun outside of work where I am the president of the Women's Political Caucus, where we train women to run for office, and we have a PAC, and we do all of the work to get pro-choice women elected to office. And so that's where we met on that board together. And so I think it's having done both. Now I worked for the party while I was on the caucus board. I worked at One America while I was on the caucus board. And now it's just actually really nice to have a job where I don't manage that at work and outside of work.
Yes.
It's kind of easier this way to have it in one space.
Totally. Well, it's great. You know, when I first got involved with the caucus, I guess it was about a little over a year ago, 15 months ago. It's just so wonderful. I was telling my husband at one point that I've done a lot of volunteering and a lot of boards. And it was the first board where I met so many people so quickly whom I loved, who have the same passions as myself. And we would all just instantly connect, and the Zooms weren't awkward. They were like fun, where I was like, I don't want to leave from. And it was just, I think part of it is because reproductive rights is such a passion of mine to have the, it's like a sorting hat at Harry Potter.
Yeah. We got sorted in here. We all care about the same thing.
Yeah. Gryffindor. We're Gryffindor.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful to meet all these women who share that passion and have time to talk, and in a very, very tumultuous time, of course.
Well,
thank you.
Ride.
So thank you for all your work there. So first let's go with a little bit on the government affairs side. So I'm also a political wonk, and oftentimes people will say, what makes you a political wonk, or what makes you love politics? How do you not give up? Because it is, it's hard work to not give up. There's plenty that I think can discourage us if we choose to let it. I worked in DC on the Hill when I was in my late 20s, and my husband and I always joke that our passions for politics are outlined by loving the show The West Wing. And I always joke that people either love the West Wing or they don't. And there's something about believing that people in politics actually can have good intent, in a world where we see plenty of evidence that they don't. As someone who spends a lot of time in Olympia, do you still see those people who have good intent, who are there doing public service for the right reasons? Are the Bartlett still out there?
Oh, yeah, I would say they're the majority of the people there. I think our pickle is they all have a different thing that they care deeply about. And so sometimes they care at each other instead of for their cause. But I think, yeah, the deep passion, the like dedication to really making our state a better place is it's all still there. It's deeply ingrained in the institutions and in the people who are driving them. I just think there's a lot of difference of opinion, particularly in a state that hasn't had a Republican governor in my political history, work history here, what, the last 20, 30 years?
1980, John
Yeah, so
Spellman.
it's, I can't do math anymore. I still feel like the 80s is 20 years ago. I'm like, oh, that's not true.
I wish it
We haven't had one
was.
in a long time. And so I think as a result, we care about a lot of the same issues, just different for each human, right? So like Inslee is very on this climate change track, and Gregoire was really doing everything she could to keep us afloat in a recession. And she had her own values before that, as I mean, the biggest tobacco settlement in history, like she came in there as a powerhouse. So so we've got a lot of the important Bartlets are still there. It's just how do we align everybody to just start rowing the same direction so they're not all rowing really hard sort of against each other.
I've talked to we have lobbyists that we work with at my organization, and in this whole crazy, hard to even fathom last 2 years, there are folks who include some lobbyists who would say, having the weird COVID period has been tough because it took away some of the sense of fellowship, of hanging out, of getting to know people. And I'm always kind of pushing back on folks saying, but it also gave many more people a chance to participate than
Oh,
had
yeah.
before. Do you kind of see it like that too? There's like pros and cons of this weird couple of years we've had in terms of people finally being able to access some of these processes.
Oh, 100%. I mean, just I've run advocacy days for a number of statewide orgs, and the amount of money that you have to spend and time on getting a busload of people from Central or Eastern Washington to Olympia for an 8 a.m. here, just like the money, the effort. I mean, especially when I was at One America, but also when I was at Planned Parenthood, people have to take the day off from their job to come and do this, and not everyone has that luxury. So the fact that we can do Zoom hearings on Zoom now is just so game changer for the way that people are able to access their legislators and lobby as like personal people, let alone actual lobbyists. Is just fundamentally better. I also think I also came into lobbying during the pandemic. I think I did a couple weeks at that last pre-COVID session, and then the last two I've done have been in COVID. As a lobbyist, and as a frankly a woman of color lobbyist, there's like five of us, there's not many of us. I think it's also helped in that way. So like the old stale white men who would buzzard around the budget office as they were writing it couldn't be there for the last 2 years. They had equal opportunity to text and call that I did, and I think it actually was really helpful to some issues and causes, not just for public transparency and even the disabled, right? Like so many folks were able to tune in now that couldn't before. I think this was the first year they had people testify actually from correction centers, like they actually let them. on different public safety bills. So it's just been ground changing. But
Wow.
it's also, I think, been really helpful to opening up more people getting into lobbying and more people accessing these legislators who are now more diverse and are more receptive to that.
Sorry, I was yelling out for, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. I had to mute really quickly. Noise in the background.
No worries. I saw a dog running around. So I hope it was a dog.
Yeah, I know. Welcome everyone to my world. My dog is behind me. There's noise in the background. Welcome to the life. Podcast.
I got my dog here. You can't see her, but I'm like Dr. Claw with the cat here. This is the dog's right here.
What kind of dog do you have?
She's a little chihuahua.
Oh, I saw that on Twitter, I think.
Yeah.
Can I see
her out? She's in here.
Oh.
She's a little tiny sausage. I pulled her out of her blanket nook.
Oh my gosh. All right. I want all podcast followers to know henceforth, I will let the person I'm interviewing show their dog. That was really cool.
We all have them. Cats, dogs, critters, they're here.
That was great. Well, you know, I was thinking as you're talking about kind of access to power and lobbyists. So I went to DC recently for a work thing, like maybe a month ago. And DC is just like this incredibly emotional, nostalgic thing for me to go visit. Yeah. And I went to the Willard and I like walked around the lobby and I was all caught up in these kind of thoughts of, oh, you know, they came up with the word lobbyist to describe people at the Willard hanging out, waiting for the White House. And a friend of mine, I forgot who, challenged me and said, well, the whole history of folks hanging out in the lobby of the Willard Hotel is it was a bunch of wealthy old white men who were all friends with one another. So, so I'm kind of excited that, I mean, I totally hear you that I'm sure you're not joined by many people who are women of color in the lobbyist ranks, but I'm so excited you're there. And hopefully we continue to change that.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit, if you can, about, if you can, I know you can, in terms of the Women's Political Caucus, how we met. What is the value, what does the caucus do in terms of some of the main functions that we play to support getting women elected, particularly women of color as well?
Yeah. So I actually got involved in the caucus back in 2014 after my dear friend Maggie Humphreys became president. She said, she put out sort of an all call to her friends. She's like, hey, I'm doing this now. Does anybody want to join the board? And I had actually run for office in 2013 and I had gone through their candidate trainings, I think in 2012 and 10 and for years beforehand when it was just the Linda Mitchell one woman incredible show.
I don't know Linda
at all, especially now that I'm doing it. Like, dear God, Linda, you're powerhouse.
Shout out to Linda, Mary's place.
So I had gone through their endorsements. I had gone through their trainings. And that is the bulk of what the caucus does. Every time I talk to a woman who has been elected or has run for office, like, the caucus was there for me. They were the first people who were there for me. So that's what we try to do, is we're sort of, if you're familiar with Emily's List, if you're on the national stage, it's this organization that is the oldest and longest serving candidate training for just women and non-binary folks in Washington state who want to run for office, who are at their core pro-choice. That shifts a little bit with time what that means. It always is about abortion, but it also and access, but it sometimes is about family economic issues and just the ways that public funds go to different kinds of issues that affect families and women. And it's been fun to watch the evolution, because when I came in, we used to talk about Hobby Lobby all the time. And now I don't think some of the women who are currently elected know about that because they're younger. So like, it's foundational, but it's been fun and interesting to watch transition over time. But we train women to run for office through spring candidate trainings and through summer salons and ongoing training. We at our base are a PAC. So we raise funds that we give to these women who we endorse, and we have local chapters who run endorsements based on which county you live in. And so those are just groups of women who get together, frankly, in living rooms, and they interview candidates and they have conversations. And that was how my interview went when I was a candidate. And it really inspired me to get involved, because like, I didn't know these women existed in Tacoma in my community. And then they were there and they were like, pro-choice fairy godmothers. They just like gave out money to some little baby. I was like 28 or something. I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew I wanted to help in this little city race. And so when I got the opportunity to get involved with the caucus, I started running. I started helping with the candidate trainings, and then eventually we decided we should do a candidate training just for women of color. And so since 2016, I've been co-facilitating that every year. And so we are the only candidate training program in Washington that's just for women of color. And we have all our trainers are women of color. It's our network of other lobbyists and consultants and women who we've all sort of grown together in this in the movement. And so it's been really fun to have us all grow and learn and try to bring in more new people to try and build it and get further. And a lot our legislature and our city councils are significantly more diverse, I think, as a direct result of those trainings and of broader work that's happening across the board. But I think one of the hottest Senate races this year is one of the women who attended our first candidate training, Emily Randall. So it's interesting and fun. It's such a good ride. It's such a good org. And then
I love
we
Emily Randall, by the way.
I love her. She's just delight. But yeah, we do all the things that a traditional PAC does to get there. We do events to make money, and we don't actually have staff, so all of our proceeds go directly to candidates. It's such a fulfilling call to make and investment to ask people to support is this org that's just here to elect good women who are gonna do right by our families. It's just so rewarding.
It feels particularly, I mean, it's felt important for years, but right now with everything facing us as a country, particularly around, being on the brink now of losing the rights that I think so many of us have taken for granted for so long, I just can't help but think, how history could have rolled out differently with different people in the US Senate, different demographics represented. It just really, it's deeply enraging when that body does so little to reflect America.
Yeah,
It's
for sure.
hard to see. In terms of some of the, the thoughts that you have when you think about training up women of color, what are some of the skills that are most the things that you think are most important in those trainings that we give that then are carried on so that we see those people actually get elected? What are some of the skills that we pass to them?
We usually have sort of a four-tier approach. We try to make sure we cover media, fundraising, messaging to some degree, and feel like nuts and bolts, like how do you actually amass a campaign? Who's at your kitchen cabinet? Who's your consultant? And I think those are some of the biggest, most important conversations that we do have is giving them a list and saying, here are the folks who are supporting the caucus, and we know that they'll support you. And then I, as president, and even before I was president, will have some of these one-on-one conversations with women who are, oh, I'm thinking about running, or I filed at the last minute because I saw no one was doing it, and I hate this person who's really bad on these issues. Help me figure it out. And I'll make some calls to some consultants and figure out who's in that race and figure out how we can make a space for them and get them the resources they need to have the conversations they need to have, because not every race needs a consultant, and I don't necessarily think all consultants are interested in saying that to them. So, and not every race needs a fundraiser, but some absolutely do. And so, it's kind of talking to someone who's deeply passionate about public service. And I have had so many women come up to me and say, oh my gosh, I am dealing with our education system now. It is terrible. I'm gonna run for Congress. I'm like, maybe we start with school board, because I think we can do a lot more for your local schools. And it's not that we can't run for Congress out of the gate. It's that we gotta match your passions with what governing body is gonna do that work. If you are deeply driven by economic development, you might want to run for a port. Like, and that's some of the stuff that we do with the caucus is just helping figure out what how people's interests match with what they want to do.
That's
I've
perfect.
been talking to some more environmentalist folks about running for more public utilities districts. That's where the action's happening for them. In
Totally.
there. And they're old, they're particularly old and white and male. So if we can take over so not just prosecutor's office, but public utilities districts, I think we've done it right.
Do you have you
The final
followed?
frontiers.
Yeah, have you followed all of the articles in the New York Times about what's his name? maybe I shouldn't name him, it'll get caught by some bot. The guy who created the critical race theory backlash, he's in Kitsap County. I won't even use his name. But anyway, he's the person who started much of the national
Oof.
movement
Gross.
to A, confuse people into thinking that we're actually teaching critical race theory in schools.
We're
But
teaching
B,
college level curriculum to kindergartners. Okay.
yeah, exactly. But B, enrage and scare people. So I went to this conference with Education Trust, a great organization. That's the one in DC that I went to. And they did a whole training based on some recent research and polling they did. And the majority of this country supports teaching kids about racism in our country's past. It does. And they have polling data to show that the majority does. But we lose that majority because of certain words and certain narratives that drive them away in fear. And so the whole training was about, we know who we have, we know who we don't have, but the movable middle, that 50 to 60%, there's certain words that work and don't work. And so it was just in a really, I'll share it with you, really amazing polling data, but very helpful. And the thing that I really took away was how much, as we've come to this place where we're in silos, where we really stop listening to one another, how much you have to kind of acknowledge there may be a part of the population with whom I never agree, but what I need to do is reach those that are closer to me and find out why it's not working the way I'm
What
trying
aren't
to
they
talk.
hearing? What's not working up their ears? What's
And the main thing that this polling data showed, it was all about the asset-based language that people are so tired that they respond more positively if you say, I want to have information in our schools so all students can be successful in their lives, as opposed to, I want curriculum in school telling people about our racist past. We're talking about the same thing. We're just talking differently, and it causes a different physical reaction for some
For
people.
sure.
It was just really intriguing. I was geeking
Yeah, that sounds
out.
fascinating.
But it's interesting kind of where we are right now with that kind of avoiding turning people off. There's this video, I don't know if you've ever heard, it's called When Ireland Said Yes. And I'll send you the link. The guy from GLAAD basically in Ireland gave a talk at this event that I was involved with a couple of years ago. And the talk was about how they got Ireland to support marriage equality, which is
Cool.
not something you would first envision Ireland doing. And he talks about the campaign, and it's a lot like what we were talking about. But at one point, he says, we didn't convince Ireland to vote yes for marriage equality. We gave Ireland a chance to be their best selves.
Nice.
And it was just really
I like
powerful.
that.
It was, so there you go. That's my spin from the Irish
I
marriage
love it. I
equality.
mean, they're doing everything right. They're better on abortion right now too, so
I know,
I can
I
move
know,
there
I know
and
exactly.
consider. It's beautiful.
Exactly.
I just went for the first time, so I'm a
Oh,
little biased.
really? Oh, I've never been. What do we tell people? I was going to say young people, but you're young. You're a lot younger than I am. But what do we tell people who are just coming of age, like early 20s, young women particularly, including trans? I mean, there are so many communities that are deeply distressed by what's happening. What do we tell people right now to, I mean, not that I'm making you answer all of this, Olga. What do we tell people to not lose faith? How can they get engaged and involved right now in this very, very painful time, whether it's around abortion rights, whether it's around school shootings? What are some of the things we tell people to stay engaged and not give up?
I like to tell people sort of two things. I feel like I talk to a lot of youth who are looking for like their career, their job. One is figure out a path that is involves self-care in a way that's not a face mask, but in a way that like doesn't leave your cup completely empty at the end of the week. So like if we're storming the basilica, let's do it, but also then like plan for the massage after, because like you might like we might need that. Or like I think a lot of it is for youth, like Gen Z and younger, they're a lot better at boundaries. They're just better at saying no. I think they're a big part of why there's such a hiring crisis right now, is like they're not accepting $15 an hour. The living wage is now 24. Like they're what got rid of unpaid internships for the most part, or made them very taboo to do. And that was not the case when I was younger. I was Millennial, so very much in every economic recession that's happened has directly impacted my career, my ability to have savings account. And so I feel like I tell them like it's a long haul, which they seem to already know. So like if we want to burn it down, let's burn it down, but also plan for how we're going to rebuild it. Like there's no utility in my mind in standing outside of a member of Congress's house for days on end if you don't have your script ready for when he actually comes out. Like what are you standing there for? For what? Why are you camped here? So have a plan. And then the other thing I like to tell them is the movement needs accountants. They need all sorts of things that people might not think. So while or HR directors who are going to hire and recruit from candidate pools that reflect the communities that these jobs are going to serve. I like to tell people to think of these non-traditional jobs as like places where you can have impact because you're gatekeeping in a certain way, or you're wealth building in a way that will help you fund. Like we need donors that aren't the same old donors. So if you can become rich and then be the person who gives back, do that. I'm not begrudging you to be the next Elon Musk. If you're going to be better, like do it. You don't have to take a vow of poverty to do the work, but do things that like that fill your cup and whatever that is, be giving back. Because I think part of the issue we have in this country is people don't want to give back. It's such an individualistic culture that think deeply about what impact you want to make and go do it. I think you're familiar with our fellow board member who runs a school, a Girl Scout troop for fun. She has boys. She just like likes hanging out with the Girl Scouts. Nothing brings me more joy than Christina's Girl Scout troop for fun.
That's so great. I totally assumed she had girls.
No, she's got two little boys. She just runs it because she likes the girls and like she's got little baby Leslie Knopes that she's bringing up. It's delightful.
That is
Like,
so great.
we can do any good we want in the world if we just decide.
Oh, I love it. I never had any idea. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I the first podcast interview I did with this podcast, I guess it was 15 months ago or so, was with Dr. Ben Danielson
Oh,
from
nice.
Seattle, who's a personal hero of mine. And by the way, if he was not already a personal hero, I made three mistakes the first time I did this podcast. Like the first time the Wi-Fi crashed, then I saved it to the wrong place on the cloud.
Oh, man.
I mean, the third time he was like, okay. So if you've ever seen Dr. Ben Danielson in the community, people, please tell him thank you for me. He was so gracious because I mean, this was a busy guy. And this was all like a month before he left his job and
Oh,
made
wow.
big decisions in his life. Yeah, he was very gracious. So he's still one of my heroes. But at one point when I was talking to him, Dr. Ben said, there's this idea of the metaphor of a vase. It's based on a famous poem. I've forgotten who he cited, but he's really good at when he gives talks, finding wonderful references in liturgy or literature or poetry or history to kind of bring it to a close. And he basically said this idea of the vase is that the idea that is perfect and shiny with no cracks is the idea of a perfect vase is a false idea of America. The reality is that we have all these cracks and all these imperfections. And if the whole vase breaks apart, someday when you rebuild the vase, it is much more beautiful. It's more beautiful for having been built back together and restored to something greater. And it really impacted me when he and I did this interview. And I've thought so much about that vase in terms of some of the fights that we have around abortion rights, racial equality. There's just so many areas where we need to really look at that vase in our country.
Yeah.
So,
Seems right. In my head, as you're saying it, I picture a vase that just has like a hole in the middle, like a squirrel running through. Like
yeah.
that's where I sort of feel like we're at. It's lacking some structural integrity, but still there. It's just like a bit of a vacancy.
Gonna tell Ben next time, add a squirrel to you. That's so great. Well, I could talk to you forever, but anything else you want to add in terms of inspiring people to either get involved with the Women's Political Caucus? We have a Twitter account they can
We
follow us, right?
do.
And a website. Is our website nwpc-wa.org? I think so. Ooh, I
I think
got
it
it.
works with or without a hyphen, but yeah.
Okay. All right. So why should, if a young woman out there is listening to this, why should she get involved and be part of the solution?
I think at its core, You got to get involved in something. Otherwise, we're not going to have a tomorrow. The earth is on fire. Our rights are going away. And I don't like the Gilead analogy, but there is a world in which even if your rights are still fine, somebody else's are not. I mean, the best example I have is the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, was passed umpteen years ago. And there are still sidewalks in my neighborhood that don't have carve outs. It takes so long to get any work done, and so much of it is budgetary. But if we're not in here pushing and asking for things and demanding things, no one will. We'll just keep moving forward in this capitalistic nightmare that doesn't get us anything and doesn't build anything for anybody coming up behind us. I want a better world for me and for my little doggo. We gotta do right. Gotta do better.
All right. Well, it's so great talking to you. And if anyone has interest in the caucus, they can find us on social channels. You can track down Olgi that way.
Please do.
I feel very reassured knowing you're down there fighting the good fight, both on the environment and for women. So thank you
Thank you.
on both accounts. And I look forward to our next board meeting because they're always so fun.
Yeah.
There's a way to do good and have fun is what I'm learning from the whole experience. So thanks again, Olgi. That was great. And everyone else, stay tuned next month for our next Washington Game Changers, where I'll surely be talking to someone who has many more wonderful things to say. And I don't yet know who that is, but I have a couple of really good things in the hopper. So thanks again, Olgi. That was great.
Exciting. Thank you.